My name is Terry Shang. I have been in fintech for about 18 years. Most of my time was spent with sell-side vendors. My specialty is in post-trade systems and emerging market. I joined Liquidity Book around 2021 in the summer. And right now over here, I'm managing both Liquidity Book's buy-side and sell-side post-trade solutions.
Hey, so I'm Sean Samuel. I'm the CTO here at Liquidity Book. So I'm mainly responsible for technology and our product footprint overall for both the buy and the sell side. I've been with the firm for around about 12 years now, but I've been involved since the inception of the company.
So Sean, give me some background about Liquidity Book. What was the initial problem that Liquidity Book was trying to solve when it was founded in 2005?
Yeah, so Liquidity Book really got started. It actually grew very organically. It started out with a small set of folks that were at a small broker dealer and initially started using technology to solve their own problems. You know, back then there were some order management systems, there were some tools, but a lot of the street was still trading very manually and errors were happening, right? Folks had errors like taking a trade over IM and rekeying that into their order management system. So Liquidity Book's really founding goal was to automate, you know, we now call straight through processing from trade conception to entry and all the way through to execution management and post-trade, and automate whatever was not and could not or struggled to be automated in that process so that you really eliminated the risk of errors and all the things that can cost traders money or, you know, put them out of business in this space. And so, you know, for the first few years that looked like Liquidity Book solving specific problems and things like fixed networking and sort of trading infrastructure. And that grew over time to be what we are today, which is a full end-to-end system for everything for all market participants in the front office, from order management to execution management to portfolio management to post-trade and middle office. Yeah, you know, just some examples of what that looks like. Yeah, I'll give you examples in various spaces. You know, the other thing Liquidity Book was founded on sort of when we started out was the idea that, you know, the more we talked to clients, we found that there are a lot of very powerful systems in the space, but they were legacy systems. And, you know, if you looked in the mid-2000s, what you had was modern internet systems and modern web experience coming out. But that kind of technology and ease of use and streamlining, same thing like straight through processing, was not being made available to capital markets users. You're still talking about very heavy, slow, hard to work with legacy systems. And so, you know, hand in hand with that concept was let's bring modern technology and the ability to move much faster and create much, much more powerful experiences for users. So, you know, some of the problems we solved there are things like, well, when you're entering a trade, you know, I'm a portfolio manager. I just want to buy three more basis points of Vodafone. And in today's street, though, that might mean I have to generate orders for 15 different funds, size them appropriately. Some are going to trade on swap. Some are going to trade on cash. Some have to trade just with the custodian. And what we found was that systems, rather than just generating that trade and letting you trade in 2 seconds, would do some of the work. But then you might have to spend literally 5 minutes reviewing everything, making a bunch of hand edits, and then sending it out to the street. On the post-trade side, in the middle office, that could look like having to send out bulk end-of-day batch updates or very late in the evening, rather than just being able to send real-time updates trade by trade to all counterparties so they're seeing a real-time view of the world. Or having to manage tons of exceptions and edit tons of trades in a very short amount of time after markets close at the end of the day, because you're not getting real-time updates via APIs from your clients' data warehouses on their account data, their settlement data, their clients' account data, security master data. So just having real-time APIs and making everything be real-time and automated. So those same concepts of flexibility and automation rippled through and created all sorts of problems for clients. And Liquidity Book is really founded around solving in that. And that's what we do today across our stack. So, you know, what we really do is we take a very much a approach with both technology and service that lets us meet our clients where their business needs are rather than fitting them into the box of what our solutions can do. So what that means is we deploy a managed service. So the client tells us what their business needs are and Liquidity Book goes and configures it and sets it up so it meets their needs rather than them having to become an expert in a system and figure out how to fit their needs into sort of the box that the vendor offers. You know, and that's what we've done throughout. And, you know, just a couple more examples before I turn it over, you know, what that looks like is, well, you know, for large funds or brokers, you know, that means like for complex needs, that means fine tuning and customizing your screens to what you need. You know, if you're a credit desk, you want a screen that looks exactly like what you care about on a repo or an IRS, rather than a generic screen that, you know, you're sort of reusing half things and they're all badly named. For a small fund, that looks like, well, I just want a quick order entry ticket with 3 fields rather than 100 fields that you have to ignore. And, you know, that comes up time and time again. So making things configurable makes a difference in this business because it's all about, you know, as we know in this business, it's all about speed and reliability and cleanliness. And the more you know, fluff you have to get through, the more manual steps you have, that's going to cost you time and money.
Terry, technology has changed a lot since 2005. We've gone through lots of different iterations of web technology. Now you've got machine learning, AI. We're moving to T+1. Walk me through how LiquidityBook has been impacted by that and how you're dealing with all of that.
T+1 refers to SEC Rule 15C6-2, which require affirmation by the end of trade day for a T+1 settlement cycle. With the change in technology, right, everyone, both sides of the market, the buy side and the sell side, will need to process post-trade messages faster. Now, traditionally, a buy side will send a number of emails to the brokers, and the broker's operation team will look at those emails and key in the allocations. And probably at the end of the day, that will go towards the clearing broker. Now, because they don't have the luxury of doing a portion of this on the next day, everything will just need to be real time. And so executing broker will ask the client to send instructions quicker, electronically if possible, and they will try to simplify their workflow so that they can send out the confirmations as early as possible for the clearing broker for the buy-side custodian to affirm before 9 o'clock. Now, you mentioned AI and machine learning. So with AI and machine learning, I think what the one's impact that will be the sell-side broker, they have the opportunity to leverage AI and machine learning to detect patterns of how a buy-side client will allocate. So for example, if a client trades a basket and of 50 orders, then but those orders didn't come in as a basket. But if one of them is allocated in one way, and they can use AI to say, oh, you know what, the next 5 orders are all allocated this way. Perhaps everything in this basket is allocated this way. So that way, it can speed up the broker's allocation process even more. Another example is, for example, if a client traded a certain stock yesterday in a certain account, and there's a movement in the market for that stock today, and the client is trading that stock today, so it's likely for the same account. So we can probably use historic data to predict what a client will allocate to, as well as like pattern recognition of how, you know, because the client allocate a certain way, going forward for the rest of the day, it's probably going to be similar.
Can you walk me through the history of settlement from kind of T+5 to T+3 to 2 to now to 1?
Yeah, so T+5 to T+3 happened a long time ago in 1993. And since then it stayed T+3 for a long period of time for the equity market. And in 2013, the European markets moved from T+3 to T+2. 3 years after that, US moved in 2017. Now we're heading into 2020. I mean, we are in 2024. I'm still stuck in 2023 mode. But yeah, now we're in 2024. This coming Memorial Day, Canada and Mexico will go T+1 on Monday, which is a US holiday, and US will follow suit on Tuesday, May 28th. So this time's happening at this time, like the a few differences here. T+2 to T+1, the gap between T+3 to T+2 and T+2 and T+1 is a lot shorter. Did I say that right? No, sorry. The gap between the first settlement day change from T+5, T+3 to T+2 to T+ Sorry about that. The first change from 93 to 2017 was 24 years. And now the second change from 2017 to 2024 is 7 years. So we can see the market is trying to get to real time as quickly as possible. Last time this happened, Europe started it first. And then US adopted that practice a few years later. At this time, it's happening in reverse. So US will, US, Canada, Mexico will start in 2024. And I foresee the rest of the world will follow suit sometime probably in the next 3 to 4 years. And then hopefully in less than 10 years, we can get to T plus zero.
Can you explain to me any concerns that LiquidityBook's clients are experiencing and how you're helping them adapt to the switch? And this, I guess, is a question for Sean.
In terms of client concerns around the process, I think a lot of stuff like this is often just fear of the unknown, what's going to happen. Terry can chime in here too, but I would say the things we do really is whenever you have, very broadly, whenever you have a regime change like this, I would say sometimes problems come up that are unexpected, right? This is fundamentally a counterparty integrated interaction in a lot of ways. And so I think a lot of what you need as both the client and the vendor is to be able to be responsive, see what's happening, stay on top of your data and be able to react to it. Sometimes what happens on the ground is not exactly the way the transition was designed. We try to do is we really focus on customer support for that, right? The technology is great and the product features are what brings the client on board. But what makes them happy from our perspective is customer support. When something's not working out right, maybe some counterparty's not interpreting the data correctly or needs something by a certain time, making sure that you've got an entire system, a company that can change things where you need to rapidly is in a lot of ways far more important than any given single feature. So that ability to be responsive and agile it's critical when you have regime changes like this, because to some extent you don't know what you don't know about these things. I think with T plus one especially, I think that's kind of the fear everybody has. I would say is not knowing what might break, even though everybody sort of thinks they're prepared for it. Some hidden dependency in terms of getting data from someone else, et cetera, that sort of thing. And how do we manage that and react to it? To me, that's going to be the measure of success. And that's, I think, what we tell our clients. One of the biggest things we advocate for is be prepared to adjust quickly and pick all your vendors and your partners that ideally you think can do react in that way and not turn things around in weeks or months, but hours or days.
You guys might be a little too young for this, but is T plus one the Y2K of the markets right now?
Well, it's a good analogy. One can hope in the sense that, I was early in my enterprise software career in 2000 and everybody was freaking out, but people actually went and did a lot of work. And at the end of the day, I'd say in most industries, people actually saw very few repercussions when, everybody's worried the world would end. And I think T plus one will hopefully look very much the same in terms of everybody is prepared for it. We know it's coming. People are hopefully doing all the testing that's needed. So I suspect, it will look similar in terms of there'll be more isolated issues than some sort of big catastrophic change. We've had other similar changes in the industry in recent years. In the US, certainly switching from OATS to CAT was a pretty big deal. And it did go off. Look, it was slowed down. It didn't roll out right away in all cases, but had to deal with some pretty big changes in recent years. In 2011, we had to deal with 15c3.5 coming down for no naked access. And that was a very big technology change that sort of required everybody to start doing a new set of things in short order. So I would say we've got good precedent here, but the biggest problem is going to be making sure all across is making sure that I think the industry will be fine, but individual market participants all need to make sure that they're ready with their vendors and their partners. Yeah.
So the impact on the broker side mainly is volume. Like most brokers' operation team is still allocating 80, if not 90% of the trades on trade day before, because who wants to go home at 8 o'clock, right? So even though the client is sending the instruction at 4 or 4:30 or even 5, the broker's operation team are still trying to allocate everything by 6:30, let's say, right? Now, what that means is that the clearing broker will have time between 6:30 or 7 to 9 o'clock to send all the confirms. The buy-side custodian will need to affirm them before that time period. I would say a lot of brokers right now are already on something like 70 or 80% same days compliant to T plus one. right? Now, they just need to raise the bar and say, you know what? 70, 80% is not good enough. How do we get this number up to 95%? Right? And SEC is reasonable. It's not like, oh, if you miss T plus one, if you miss the deadline, there'll be a heavy fine, right? So what DTCC is doing is they're introducing this is broker scorecard to tell the clients, tell the buy side, so anyone really, how a broker is doing in terms of T plus one compliance. So brokers have a reputational risk rather than a financial risk. And then over this year, next year, and as they improve their automation process, maybe they'll simplify their business, simplify the services that you provide to your clients so that your T plus one rate will go higher, right? So those are things that I foresee all coming. And at the same time, let's say fixed allocation will allow the buy side to send instructions in real time upon order completion rather than at 4 o'clock. Remember, the earlier the broker gets it, the faster things are done. And then hopefully the more time they have to manage an exception before the next day. So maybe brokers will sponsor more of these fixed connections for the buy side to send allocation instructions. And because of that, maybe they'll raise the commission. As far as the buy side, you know, if I used to use like 15 brokers and only 3 brokers are paying for my fixed connect, post-trade fixed connection, maybe I won't use 15 brokers. Maybe I'll use 10 brokers. So that way I can help my trade settle properly on T plus one.
What are some of the ways the types of automation that the buy and sell sides can use to transition to T plus one in May, Terry?
So like I said earlier, it's to change the way they communicate to a digital form, right? Electronically rather than like email or phone or IM. That is the first step, because a lot of times right now, everything's batch process, and that doesn't start until the market close. So no one does anything. So the buyer doesn't send anything until market closed. And the broker's operation team, you know, they don't start working until, let's say, 3:45, right? Being right around some of the buy sides might send in a little earlier. We see that with our customers too. A lot of their customers don't send in the instructions, even if it's electronic, until pretty late. So I think one of the things that the buy side can do is proactively, you know, change the process so that they can send fixed allocations to their brokers earlier, right? If the order is done at noon, send it at noon. And at the same time, brokers can build more electronic connection, post-trade connections to these buy sides so that they don't have to process things over email. Or brokers can introduce some sort of email automation so then they can scan an email and automatically apply an allocation. I know DTCC is also updating their CTM offering so that the buy side can have auto affirmation, and as well as broker has this product called Match to Instruct, right? So that's if the client and broker already use DTCTM, there's no reason to do DTC affirmation after CTM, because CTM already has an affirmation. So if both sides sign up for these services, then you know, those trades will settle a lot, will be affirmed on DTC system a lot faster.
Yeah. And I'll just pick up on one thread Terry introduced there, which is, I think, you know, Terry noted it, in the happy case where the client has a system, the broker has a system, most of this stuff is already ready. But at the edges, brokers need to be prepared to introduce additional automation, you know, gateways and stuff that they're manually processing today. Terry said, whether it's email, spreadsheets, files, whatever it is, you need to be able to prepare to consume that automatically in order to get the kind of throughput and turnaround that's going to be needed in a T plus one world. And look, from our perspective, what we try to offer is that we offer the best customer service we can to our clients. And as a broker, you want to do the same thing. And that means not forcing your client to switch their how they do their data entry and manipulation and transfer in order to meet them where they live. So, you know, like Terry said, I think those are critical services to add on top of, you know, sure, hopefully everybody's ready with their core systems, but how you do data integration, that's a theme all over today. And that's ultra critical in the T plus one world, that you need to be able to automate that integration no matter how that client wants to get to you, rather than forcing them to come through the mainline use cases of, yeah, go through DTCC or an API or one hour fix. You know, those are great, but not everybody is geared to do that. And the people who win are going to be the people who meet clients where they want to come.
Terry, at the FIA show and in the fall, I spoke to a company that had AI allocation of trades. And so can you discuss, you know, AI and machine learning transition to 2+1 and how AI and machine learning impacts on the industry more generally?
So AI and machine learning, you spoke with someone that implemented AI machine learning for allocations. So like I said earlier, similar to an earlier question that you asked, I think AI and machine learning are great for pattern detection. So when you need to handle a high volume of trades, so for example, broker dealer with 2,000 trades, for example, instead of having what the broker dealer needs to ask themselves is, well, what are my operation team doing day to day that's repetitive? And how can I change that? And how can I utilize AI and the machine learning to change that? Perhaps it's better to predict the allocations to begin with. And then once the client sends you the instruction, and then you correct that afterwards, right? So I think at the industry level, fintech is a very slow moving industry. Even though we're moving faster than before, like Sean said, a lot of firms still have these siloed legacy systems. And I think at the industry level, we won't, even though we might want to move fast because of the burden of the legacy system, we as an industry won't be moving as fast. And in the post-trade world, I mean, certainly AI, machine learning, even blockchain can be used to accelerate us from T+1 to T+0. In fact, I think those will be the key, because how do you get legacy systems to communicate each other unless there's some sort of intelligence involved, unless they have some sort of pattern or some sort of predictability? So then you can say, oh, you know what? This guy never sends me commission because mine is always right. If it's wrong, we'll deal with it after settlement. So always use my static data instead of the client's transactional data and do a comparison. So like things like this can certainly be automated even further with the use of AI and machine learning.
What's the future of the value of being a master of spreadsheets?
I would say there's still going to be value, but I think, like we're hearing a lot, you're gonna have to be a subject matter expert, not just a spreadsheet jockey more and more, right? Like manipulating a spreadsheet is going to become an increasingly not as valuable task, but ultimately you still have to know what to do with the data, what you're trying to do with it, and what you're trying to build. I do think, yeah, we're absolutely getting to a world where you'll be able to in the free text explain the pivot table you want, right, et cetera, and the kinds of transformations you want. That those skills are going away, but understanding data and what you want out of it and what you want to do with it, those skills are going to only become more critical, because the people who can ask and answer questions quickly are going to find themselves even more effective and able to do far more in a generative AI enabled world. The amount of work I could do, well, every question, smart question I want to ask right now, I still have to do a ton of manual work, but every 6 months now, I'm going to be able to ask and answer twice as many questions, three times as many questions. And that's going to make the people with that knowledge far more valuable. So I think subject matter expertise, domain expertise is going to just become ever more critical with every passing year. And that's for us, having somebody like Terry on board exactly gives us like understanding deeply, especially in financial markets on the operations side, especially how everything is knit together. AI isn't going to solve those problems for you. It'll go solve specific problems with data for you, go answer questions for you, but understanding how it ties together and what we want to do to make that happen, that's actually only becoming ever more critical.
I mean, I still use spreadsheets every day. Just being able to be having the ability to just pull up something, type a few formula, and then get to a certain result, I think that's still going to be useful. That's an eternal skill.
So I've heard anecdotal stories about it mostly from the derivative side, that they're having difficulty finding people to hire in the back office. I assume that that's probably true over on the equities, you know, security side as well. all of this change that's occurring in terms of the skill sets that are necessary. What are the skills or the training that's going to be necessary to be a back office person moving forward?
That's a very good question. But John, basically, you're asking if T plus one will lay people off of operations, right? More or less. I think the repetitive work will be removed at some point. So if there's an operations person who is just strictly following an email to key in certain accounts or translating certain value into certain allocations in their system, a lot of that can probably be automated. And it, because of T plus one, it's pushing the brokers, pushing the institutions to automate this. So in terms of operations, I think operations will need to find ways to, like, instead of monitoring, instead of saying, like, I'm going to allocate these trades and I'm done, and then these will settle, I think, like, operations will need to pick up newer skills, such as, like, how do I improve this by handling this exception?
I think where you're heading is it's going to come down to, you know, exactly what we were just talking about a minute ago, is everybody's got to be analytical about what they're doing and how to improve the process. You're no longer going to be able to substitute time for efficiency. You can't just say, okay, I'll plug away for another 4 hours, because you can't do that when you have 10 times or 100 times as much data. You have to go systematically figure out what's going wrong and how you address it systematically, and then tell your system, okay, I need to do this. I need to make this kind of systematic correction to my data, run it through this additional process, whatever it is. And that's, whether it's, yeah, the back office, front office, middle office, you're going to have to be analytical and understanding what your data is doing, not just follow a recipe that someone else has come up with or applying fixes. Everything you do, you have to be able to generalize it. So yeah, I think that's a skill. That's where everybody's heading. Yeah, you know, the days of just being able to, like Terry was saying, just sit down and crank out your fixes and just keep doing the same thing over and over is going away very, very rapidly. If you don't learn what you're doing, why you're doing what you're doing, and then how to generalize it, you're not going to be able to help your firm or your clients stay on top of an ever-growing volume of data and exceptions and problems to handle.
Yeah, especially now, like DTC has implemented this broker scorecard, right? If I'm head of operations at a bank and my score, and let's say my DTC scorecard is going from 70 to 75 to 80 to 85 to 90, you know, like, then obviously my whole team is doing the right thing. I think, like, that's what people in operation will focus on more, is to, like, what else do I need to do to show a result in process improvement, since there is this benchmark that measures it now.
Sean, what's LiquidityBook's plans for 2024? What's on tap?
Yeah, budget stuff, right? The first thing I'd say is continuing sort of some of the discussion we've been having here about AI is, you know, what LiquidityBook's always done is try to position ourselves to be able to leverage whatever new technology is out there, right? Whether that was moving to the cloud in AWS, leveraging what's out there, right? That's sort of the key to staying nimble, which makes us effective and lets us create change faster than anybody. So obviously, Gen AI is the biggest one out there, and that's something we see as a big trend for 2024. I will say a lot of folks are excited about how do I incorporate Gen AI and sort of into my product and put it in my users' hands quickly as possible. I would actually say we're taking a bit more of a ground-up approach. Gen AI, everybody should be excited about it. It is a game changer. But if you don't understand how you can use it to make yourself vastly more effective, you can't really put it in the hands of your clients until you're already doing that. So for us, actually, where we're starting largely is internally, incorporating into our tools and processes as quickly as possible to make everybody at LiquidityBook far more effective. And I think the difference is our customers will see that in 2024. I think by what we want is, you know, our customer service is already our pride point, but continuing to stay extremely fast and responsive and making changes really quickly, enabling Gen AI internally is going to let us continue to do that and grow our client base without growing the firm. That keeps us lean and efficient and avoiding all the traps that you fall into when you get bigger in terms of having three layers of people to go to through to get to somebody who knows. Gen AI is going to let you avoid that. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing we do with Gen AI in 2024. That said, we are certainly looking at how to incorporate it into our products. Middle office is a great example of a place where, in terms of you know, pattern matching and data analysis where we think it can be used. But I think a lot of the should be that you should, you know, we think that we should be improving the bar in terms of the service we provide over the course of 2024. Besides that, some of the other things we're excited about are very broadly on both the buy and the sell side. Traditionally, we've done a ton of listed products. Today, we do a ton of credit products, and we're expanding that very quickly. You know, whether it's, you know, repos or IRS or mortgage servicing rights or getting into more esoteric products that people trade, just being everywhere and everything for everybody across the industry, something we're very excited about. And finally, getting our accounting and IBOR solutions. They've long been a part of our solution, but getting that out in front of everybody and offering people that complete stack from your trading system to your accounting to your middle office and post-trade. I think 2024 is where we want to have that, have everybody know that we've got that story. You know, we're happy to provide any one piece of that that adds value, but we can also do everything.
What do you think are the biggest stumbling blocks or impediments that you're concerned about in 2024?
So for us, for the industry, any particular slant you're looking at?
Yeah, I'll go with the industry as a whole in terms of T+1, and then anything particular for, you know, challenges for Liquidity Book for 2024.
Yeah, for me, and I'd love to get Terry's answer too. For T+1, as well as the industry more broadly, you know, I think what we see is all of our clients are handling more data more quickly. So the need to, you know, for us, the watchwords continue to be straight through processing and, you know, automation and fast turnaround. Those are the keys for everybody who's being asked to do more with less. And so for us, it's always about minimizing the work, handling more things automatically, and just focusing on an ever small amount, hopefully, of exception management. Almost everything we do is focused on that. And I think if I look at our clients in the industry, that's one of the biggest keys to success. And, you know, for us, it's very much the same thing. Is we offer a very, you know, we offer very bespoke experience to our clients, even though it's very scalable. And continuing to do that, even as we add more products, more asset classes, more services, is the key to success for us as well. And very much mirrors what our clients' needs are. Terry, any sort of specific comments around T+1?
Yeah, so with T+1, like we've been talking about the whole call, everything just needs to be faster. And, you know, the customers with higher volume will need to process things. It'll be harder for them to make things faster. Those are the broker dealers. So we actually started calling our middle office product the post-trade hub, because it's not just a middle office allocation system, because we support street side trades to the, in real time as well. And you can have different time periods that you send the different events that trigger these messages downstream for netting purposes. At the same time, we do a lot of message normalization from different drop copies into the clearing systems. So our middle office system is really a true centralized post-trade hub for multiple front office systems, for the front office systems for the broker dealer with multiple clearing interfaces. And in 2024, we'll continue to build on that. So our focus will be, in order to make things faster, we just need to be certified with more clearing brokers and have more interfaces. That way, we can cut down on the onboarding time when we need to start a new implementation. And at the same time, you know, our brokers will have options to switch clearing brokers if they want to, or do multi-clearing. In addition, another thing that we're working on is reconciliation. So a lot of broker-dealers have some sort of, like you said, spreadsheet, right? They will export things into a spreadsheet and then manually compare the total volume on both sides to make sure they processed everything. So we're trying to look into optimizing that a bit, process a bit, and adding that to our post-trade hub offering, where we can take the messages received by the hub and compare that with the orders and the blocks that we created for the user to interact with, and then also reconcile that with like the messages that we sent to the back office. So that way, if a bad message was sent to us by an upstream system, or if we miss a message because of a user mistake, other user will be, the IT user will be able to catch that on a monitor quicker before T+1, right?
So there's a lot of innovation that's going on around the AI and and machine learning. And some of it is a lot of different startups, you know, particularly as the big technology firms have shed a lot of talent. Are there any particular deals or partners or ventures that you guys are excited about with any partners?
Not specifically in AI right now. We're certainly excited to see what gets traction. You know, our approach there is we're certainly looking at it for adding, you know, product features and for our own use. We certainly expect that we're going to hear, you know, we tend to be pretty client driven and mostly in this, and certainly expect that AI powered solutions are going to become, you know, increasingly interesting up and down the trading stack. I don't think it's going to be any one area. You know, I think with, you know, certainly upstream of sort of where LiquidityBook typically lives, often sort of trade inception and construction. We're going to see a lot of stuff there. We're excited to integrate with those solutions. We know we don't try to be everything to everybody, and sort of where LiquidityBook traditionally very much focused on straight through processing, sort of analytic when it comes to analytics and sort of building ideas around your data, like building upfront, figuring out what I want to trade and why. We're excited about bringing that into LiquidityBook through integration. So we're very excited to work with partners on that front. We don't yet sort of see any leaders yet that are coming out. So I think that's something we're continuing to keep an eye on. But our view is very much, and what we do, and frankly, we think everybody should be doing, is thinking about it from an open ecosystem approach. You have open APIs, and these days it's very easy to integrate. And that's really our approach, is, you know, is be very, you know, very vendor and partner agnostic on that front.